you weren't here for the introduction, so it'd be helpful if you can introduce yourself to the members of the FASB, and then we'll get started.
Yes, of course. My name is Rachel Lovely. I'm an associate director here at the ISB, in charge of many of our better communication projects. I'm here under a bit of false pretenses today, as unfortunately the project manager for the primary financial statements project wasn't available, so you will have to make do with me today.
Hi, I am Denise Durand. I'm a technical manager here at the ISB, and I work for the primary financial statements project.
Okay, let's kick off. Thank you. Good morning, everyone. The purpose of this session is to discuss the ISB's primary financial statements project and the FASB's project on performance reporting. In particular, we'd like to focus on an area of overlap between the two projects, which is the work that we're both doing on disaggregation of information in the Statement of Financial Performance, or the income statement. You have a number of agenda papers in front of you. Agenda paper 21A provides you with an overview of the ISB's primary financial statements project. 21C provides an overview of the FASB's project. Those overviews are there, and I'm sure you've read them, so we're going to try and keep the tee-ups relatively short so that there's an opportunity for discussion and for questions. What I'll start by doing is going through Agenda Paper 21A, which has, 21B, which has the slides for the Primary Financial Statements Project. I will give you an overview of the broad scope of that project, pause then for you to ask questions about the scope of the project, and then move on to the more detailed area of disaggregation. I'll then hand over to Lauren, who will talk about the work that the FASB is doing on disaggregation, and then we'll open it up for a more general discussion around disaggregation. So before moving on, does anyone have any questions about how we're proposing to run the session today? Brilliant, in which case I will move on. If you could turn to slide 4 of the Agenda Paper 21B, this will give you a general impression of how the work on the Primary Financial Statements Project fits into the broader theme that the board has of better communication in financial reporting. We have a number of projects that are designed to improve the way in which information is communicated in the financial statements. We have Primary Financial Statements Project, which we'll be discussing now. We have the Disclosure Initiative project, which focuses primarily on disclosures in the financial statements, and we will talk about that after lunch. We have our work on management commentary, so the information that is outside of the financial statements. And then, of course, we have the work that we're doing on the IFRS taxonomy, which is looking at how information is provided in an electronic format and ensuring that we have a mechanism for that information to be provided. So primary financial statements is a key aspect of that whole better communication theme that we've been working on. Slide 5 sets out the project timeline. It was added to our research agenda back in July 2014, although work didn't really start on the project until 2016. The work that we've been doing on this project is really very much in response to feedback that we've had from users of financial statements that this is an area they would like us to focus on. They say, in particular, communication of information about financial performance could be significantly improved. And so that feedback was reinforced by what we heard in our 2015 agenda consultation. And so we started work looking at and exploring what were the particular issues that users of financial statements had with the primary financial statements. And we very much targeted our scope of the project on what we discovered from that research and looking at solving the problems that were identified as part of that work. Just to let you know, we haven't yet decided whether we're going to issue an exposure draft or a discussion paper of the project. We wanted to work through the issues and see which of those documents would fit best with the suite of decisions that we had made on the project. We're planning to ask the board to make a decision on that later in the year. Slide 6 sets out the problems that were identified when we did our initial research back in 2016, and in particular problems with financial performance that users of financial statements identified. They really fall into sort of three main areas. The first is around comparability. There are concerns that there is insufficient comparability in the primary financial statements, and in particular in the statement of financial performance. there is a concern about a lack of disaggregation of information. So many people will look at the statement of financial performance and see a very limited number of line items actually presented in that statement, and there were calls from many users to improve that disaggregation of information and provide more information about how those line items were made up. And then there was a recurring theme around alternative performance measures, non-GAAP measures, however you want to call them, saying that actually these measures can provide useful information to the users of financial statements, but often there's a lack of transparency around how those items are calculated and a lack of consistency year on year, for example. There was also a finding that with a lot of these alternative performance measures, the quality of the disclosures around them very much depended upon the regulatory environment in which a particular entity was sat. In some jurisdictions, the regulators required disclosures around them and they were pretty good. In other jurisdictions, there was much less transparency around these measures. And so there was a call for perhaps bringing greater transparency around these alternative performance measures. Slide 7 sort of expands on what I've just been talking about in terms of the alternative performance measures, and as I said, reinforcing this idea that they can provide relevant and useful information if used properly, but often you're not getting the disclosures and the transparency around the measures that would enable users to actually decide whether this information is useful to them or whether this information could safely be ignored. Slide 8 sets out a recurring theme that we've seen as part of this project, and something that we've had to try and balance in a way, competing calls for comparability and flexibility. So there's a general acceptance that if you provide entities with flexibility to provide the information in the way in which they would like to provide it, it means that you can have more entity-specific information and potentially more relevant information about that particular entity. However, there's a trade-off there that allowing entities to have this flexibility can mean that there is a reduction in comparability of the information. So users will tell us that actually you can't compare these entities because they have such different ways of reporting the information, and we would like a little bit more comparability, particularly in the primary financial statements. So what we've been trying to do is to balance those two sort of calls for comparability and flexibility in the project. The way we've been trying to achieve comparability is by introducing some additional subtotals into the statement of financial performance. For example, we're talking about introducing an EBIT subtotal, and we're being fairly strict about how we define that in an effort to give people a comparable starting point for their analysis. We're also looking to try and remove some of the options that are available for presentation of information, both in the statement of financial performance and in the statement of cash flows, again, to try and make this information more comparable for users. The one thing to help with the comparability, I think, is the whole work that we're doing on disaggregation. Because if you have the greater disaggregation, then people can choose to move things around the statement of financial performance if they don't agree with where we've put things in order to try and achieve comparability. So, for example, if we specified a particular type of interest must go in the financing line, as long as we've disaggregated that, users who disagree with that decision could move it around the statement of financial performance if they wanted to. In terms of flexibility, the way we tried to do that is to look at disclosures around what we've called management performance measures, but these are the alternative performance measures or the non-GAAP measures, and effectively requiring entities to provide information about these management performance measures, but accompanied with significant disclosures to enable users to understand how these measures are actually made up and, if necessary, disagree with some of the adjustments that the company is making in arriving at these management performance measures. Slide 9 sets out in more detail the scope of the project. I think what I'd like to reiterate here is that we're not doing a fundamental rethink of all the primary financial statements. So we're not going back to the FSP project, which was looking at all of the primary financial statements and looking to fundamentally changing them. What we're doing here is very much focusing on those areas that users told us we could make the most and greatest improvements to the primary financial financial statements. And the biggest message we got was around the statement of financial performance, which is where we are targeting most of our work. So what we're looking at doing is introducing additional subtotals and categories into that statement to give it more structure and more comparability. So, for example, we are defining an EBIT subtotal. We're also introducing an investing category into statement of financial performance. And we're also removing some of the options that are available for the presentation of information about associates and joint ventures. We've also got the work on management performance measures, which I've already touched on. And we're doing some limited changes to the way information is presented in the statement of other comprehensive income, largely around relabeling the categories that are presented in that statement, with an effort to try and make it more understandable what's actually included in other comprehensive income. We're not looking to provide guidance as part of this project on when something should be reported in OCI or when it should be recycled from OCI. We have some high-level guidance on that in our new conceptual framework, and we decided not to address it as part of this project. The work that we're doing on the statement of cash flows is largely focused on eliminating some of the options that are available in our existing standard on statement of cash flows. That, again, was in response to users telling us that those options are not particularly useful to them. They like to know where a particular item of interest or dividends, for example, is included in that statement, and so remove the options, and we would find the information much more useful. We're also looking at a consistent starting point for the indirect method, and that is very much flowing from the work that we have been doing on the additional subtotals in the statement of financial performance. And we have some knock-on changes to how information about cash flows related to associates and joint ventures is presented. We then move on to improving disaggregation in the financial statements, and I will come on a little bit later to the work that we're doing in that area and describe it in a little bit more detail. Just one other thing to note is that for the moment we have been very much focused on non-financial entities, and all tentative decisions that we've made apply to non-financial entities only. One of the big outstanding issues on this project is to what extent can the decisions that we have made so far also apply to financial entities, and again we'll come on to that in a little bit in a minute or two. So I will pause there with that brief overview of the larger project and see if you have any questions on that before we move on to the work we've been doing on disaggregation.
Al?
Yeah. Rachel, let me start with your last comment about the non-financials. I can appreciate that, you know, financials make up maybe 20%, I'm thinking from a U.S. perspective, about 20% of the S&P 500. But if you look at the earnings of S&P 500 companies collectively, between financials and non-financials, about 50% of the earnings, I think, last time I looked at this data, came from financials. So this project would really just focus on the other 50% of earnings that come from non-financials. So it is, you put it in the context of entities, but there's so many embedded finance entities within companies, and quite often it's the bulk of the profits of those companies. So you're going to focus just on the activities, non-financial activities, as opposed to entities? How is that going to work?
What we're doing at the moment is saying that for the purposes of developing our initial decisions, we look at non-financial entities and simple non-financial entities. So we're well aware that there are entities who have significant financing aspects to their operations, etc. But at the moment, just for simplicity and getting the decisions made, at first to focus on the non-financials. We know that there is a very big decision point as to what we'd want to do with, to some extent, the pure financials are the easy bit of it, because that you can say, well, that bit is the easy bit. The more difficult bit are the conglomerates or just entities with significant financing components, and the question is, what do we do about those? Something that we're analysing at the moment, and we're planning to bring some discussions to the board. In fact, this week we're having our first discussions with the board, looking at the problems and the issues. We have some areas that quite clearly can apply quite straightforwardly to the financials, so a lot of the work that we're doing on disaggregation I think could actually apply fairly straightforwardly to the financials. There are areas where there are obviously very significant difficulties associated with it. So, for example, the EBIT subtotal, that is incredibly difficult to see how we could come up with a with a relevant measure that would apply to something like a bank. So lots of work still to do in that area.
Okay. Well, let's go to that EBIT then. On page 6, you noted insufficient disaggregation and presentation that would provide, in effect, comparability. You put it in the negative, but comparability and disaggregation. Is there a weighting between the two? Do you prioritize comparability over disaggregation? And flexibility, I think, is another word that you used. Or would you put priority on flexibility and disaggregation over comparability? The reason I ask that, and Mark and I have this debate all the time at the table.
We'll have the debate again today.
Only for another week or two.
Let's see, 11 days, but I'm not who's counting. Do you do analysis from a top-down or a bottom-up? So my first question is really, what types of investors were you talking to as you pulled this information together? And I'm curious as to how that compares to the types of investors that we're talking to in the U.S., because you can get dramatically different feedback in terms of the approaches and which one's more important.
The answer is we spoke to quite a broad section of investors, and Denise may be able to add some additional sort of colour to this. But yes, we spoke to a broad selection of investors. And the priority in which we put sort of comparability versus disaggregation, I think to some extent depends upon the areas that you're looking at. And I don't think there's always a conflict between the two. So, for example, when you're looking at the EBIT subtotal and the thing that we have in the financing component, we have been quite strict in terms of defining what items we would like to see, the line items that we would like to see in that financing component. So we have a significant number of line items which we see as, you know, a significant amount of disaggregation of information, which at the moment is quite compressed. But because we have been quite clear about what we want in it, you end up with that comparability as well. Now, when it gets to some other areas where, for example, you're looking at disaggregation, some of the expenses higher up, then I think it's a lot more difficult to actually be prescriptive about what you would disaggregate that information into. And so you get greater disaggregation, but as you said, you don't necessarily get the comparability. So I think it depends on which particular area you're looking at as to whether comparability is more important or disaggregation is more important. Did you have anything to add to that, Denise?
Yes, just jumping a little bit to the slide 15, just to give you a sense of the feedback that we received from users.
15.
We recently had a joint meeting with preparers and users, with our advisory bodies, and we asked them to tell us which of these approaches they would favor when presenting additional information by nature, when an entity uses a by-function methodology. So it was interesting to see that users in general want more disaggregation. And that's the word, disaggregation. They, in terms of the alternatives that they favor alternative B and alternative C. So some users really want the standardized approach. They really would like the board to define some standard functional categories and define the components by nature for these functional categories. However, some users are a little bit more relaxed, and they say, well, as long as I obtain this information by nature at the entity level, it's fine. So I think that to your question, I think they favor flexibility. Some favor flexibility, some favor more comparability. So there's a mix. And there are some mixed views in terms of the information that they want.
But I think that's where Mark and I will differ. I'm more the flexible bottoms-up analysis, and Mark is more of a top-down. And we meet in the middle, but we just come there from different directions, and it sometimes influences the way I vote versus how Mark votes.
You want to get in and respond, or? Are you going to ask Gary if we're going to have this?
Yeah, no. The only thing I could say is that the way I did it is going to be different from the way Nick did it. It's going to be different from the way Hal and Gary did it. So that's fine. So That's exactly where I was going to go too. This comparability versus flexibility is really interesting. To me, it was always a matter of timing. I would start out at the top, figure out which ones I had to look at more closely, and then dive in on those that are more closely, and then I wanted the consistency. And so my question was going to be, how much, if at all, have you guys talked to the data aggregators, which is what we call the Bloombergs of the world, the Capital IQ of the world, who are already trying to aggregate this data into a comparable set of information? Have you thought about that? Have you talked to them as you're doing this process?
Yeah, in our initial research on the project, we did actually talk to some of the data aggregators and look at how they were actually undertaking this sort of analysis and the exercise that they do in terms of standardizing the data, and we certainly found that very useful.
Can I just, sorry to button, but just directly on the point. So in response to your question, how Rachel said something which is sort of my logic, but I just wanted to see what you and Mark thought of it, which is it a complete, such a stark trade-off in the sense that if we come up with a definition of EBIT and which focuses on, I can't remember the words we used, but...
Financing activity.
Financing concept is what sort of ends you there. But in addition to that, we are trying to improve the amount of disaggregation so you can see the particular line items. So if you, as an investor, would have thought about EBIT differently, or you're not interested in EBIT, you're interested in a different number, but you've got more line items to work with so you can adjust away from, we start off with a pretty standardised measure between the corporates, our version of EBIT, but if you don't agree with it, you can take the disaggregated numbers and line items and make your adjusted. You can sort of have some flexibility within the comparability. Do you agree with that, or do you see a really stark trade-off?
I'm indifferent to the comparability notion, and things like EBIT didn't matter to me at all. But I think, I'm not putting words in Mark's mouth, hopefully, but Mark would jump around from one company to another depending on what questions he was getting, whereas I focused on a particular industry and knew all those companies. And so I didn't need that comparability. I looked at each company.
But you don't mind having it. You might just not use it.
I wouldn't have put the emphasis on it, and I think there's some real challenges to it. But it also is designed to, really help investors from a top down. It does very little from a bottom up analysis. So it's not bad.
And the way I would look at it is, if I were covering the whole industry as well, and I had a stack of 10 Qs to read, I would prioritize it by looking at the comparable information and seeing where the quality of EBIT or the quality of operating income was off or whatever, seeing something that's different this period, and that would help me prioritize which ones that I wanted the detail flexibility review on.
Right.
And it's just a different methodology. We've also started talking more to the quant funds, and they might look at things on a more comparable basis or on by the same token, they might have an algorithm that doesn't care about comparative analysis and just really digs in on certain of the line items within it.
I think it's different really, approaches. Mark hit on a really important point. I think that investing generally is shifting toward more of a, instead of company by company analysis, but more block by block. So I want to have more exposure to energy or less to energy, more to tech, less to tech on down the line. And so that top-down comparability information may become more relevant as people are making decisions to invest in or out of a block, because I'd like all the EBIT for this particular sector to be above or below some number before I go in. Whereas if you're really looking company by company, it's not as significant an issue.
Christine?
So I have a question about what shows up on page 7 of the paper in paragraphs 20 and 21. Paper 221A. I think that there's a benefit to the users of financial statements of putting all the information related to the financing activities in one place, and so I commend you guys for trying to accomplish that. My question is, when I look at 21, which seems to me to sort of be the principle, where it looks at financing activities determined with respect to a resource provider providing credit, and then there being a distribution or a return to that creditor. To me, that makes a lot of sense in thinking about financing activities that way. But then when I look at what's included in 20, there's items in here like the last one, item E, other finance expenses, unwinding of a discount on liabilities not arising from financing activities. So it seems like you have this sort of pure notion and then deviate from that. If you could help me to understand what's motivating that decision to sort of start mixing the non-financing with the financing in that category.
Yeah, I think that's a very fair point, that actually you have the financing aspect, which I think is covered by 20 A, B, and C, and then D and E are a little bit of oddities there. And I think this was an area that we discussed quite a lot in the board meeting as to where we would actually put those items. And I think if you follow the principle that we've got in 21, you would end it up with those being further up the income statement and not in our financing section. However, there was concern that actually these are put into the financing section currently today. They're not put higher up, and many of the investors that we spoke to said they were quite happy with these being down in the financing section. So we said, okay, let's not disturb what we've got today, but let's go on to this disaggregation idea that if we require these things to be separated out, that then if people disagree with the way in which we have actually characterized them, they could always move those further up to the income statement if they wanted to. So I agree, we haven't quite followed through on our principle, but we think the disaggregation that we're requiring means that if people disagree with where we've ended up, they can shift things around.
Nick?
Yeah, sorry, I was just going to make one last comment on the comparability debate that was happening over here. I think the one big change I saw over the course of my career on the buy side is the shift from focus on domestic mandates to the vast majority of investment professionals be focused on domestic markets to international and global. So those professionals are dealing with much larger universes of stocks and have to screen, have to filter down to get started, often, in the majority of cases. I think that's where demand for more comparability has come into play over those years.
Nick, I agree with your observation. I also observed over the years, I don't know if it's still true, that when I tried to hire analysts in Europe, they didn't want to be specialists, whereas our business model was predominantly specialist. You focused on energy or financials or whatever because of the career paths were just different in Europe. And so that their starting point needed to be at a higher level and the comparability was more important. I didn't know if that was still true today.
I've worked with both people who want to be specialists and people who want to be generalists. So I
wish I could have found a few more of the specialists.
Right. You should have asked.
Continue.
Thank you. If we move on then to the work that we're doing on improving disaggregation, we've already touched on some of the aspects of this in the discussion so far. But if we could turn to slide 12, which summarises the main decisions that we have made on improving disaggregation. Firstly, we're starting off with a number of principles of disaggregation. And so this is a very high-level guidance that's intended to explain to people, firstly, what do we mean by aggregation and disaggregation in the financial statements, and describe the steps involved in classification, aggregation, and disaggregation. This work was very much based upon what we have in our conceptual framework and expanding it to provide some general high-level principle guidance to entities in terms of how they think about disaggregation. We then go into some more detail about disaggregation by nature and by function within what we called our business profit subtotal. So this only applies above business profit. It wouldn't apply to our investing category or to our financing category in the statement of financial performance. And what we do here is we give a description of a by nature method of disaggregating expenses and a by function method of disaggregating expenses. We then say that entities should pick the method which provides the most useful information to the users of financial statements. So it's not a free choice. You have to pick the one that provides the most useful information. We then provide some guidance around how to make that decision. I'll come on to that in a slide shortly, that describes the factors that we want people to consider when deciding between by function and by nature. What we then also heard was that when entities provide a by-function analysis of expenses, users also want information about the nature of those expenses. And so what we are going to require is that entities that provide a functional analysis of expenses should, in addition, provide some information about the nature of those expenses. We looked at some various different ways of disaggregating that information, and we'll come on to explain that shortly. We also have some areas that we're going to be exploring. We haven't yet done work on this, we've done some work on this, but we haven't yet brought the work to the board, which is looking at minimum line items in the primary financial statements. So IS1 currently has a large list of minimum line items, not only in the statement of financial performance, but also in the statement of financial position. We're planning to review that list of line items and see if there are things that potentially could be added to that list, or indeed whether there are things that actually we could take out of that list of minimum line items, the things that would be expected to be provided in the primary financial statements, assuming those items were material. Another area we've been looking at exploring is the idea of developing templates for the primary financial statements. So this would be looking at a limited number of industries and providing illustrative templates of how entities could provide the information following the requirements that we're putting in, and some additional suggestions for how to present the information. There's quite a few things that we need to think about in terms of templates. So firstly, which industries would we look at? Secondly, do we want to make those templates mandatory or optional? I think it would actually be quite difficult for us to make them mandatory, but I think optional and illustrative templates could be quite useful, not least because that would give us something to hang some of the elements from the IFRS taxonomy. So it, at the moment, our taxonomy reflects anything that we have in the standards. So if we have illustrative templates in the standards, that would give us some additional elements for the taxonomy, which we hope would improve the electronic reporting of the information in the primary financial statements. So whether we make them mandatory or non-mandatory, we then need to also think about what level of detail to go into in terms of those illustrations, whether we want to do things for all of the primary financial statements or whether only for perhaps the cash, the balance sheet and the income statement, and whether perhaps we want to go further than the primary financial statements and provide some selected notes and illustrative examples of those selected notes. And so some big questions there. Of course, then the other big issue that we have outstanding is to what extent we can apply the decisions that we've already made to financial entities, and whether we need to adapt them and in which areas we need to adapt those decisions. Slide 13 talks a little bit in more detail about the disaggregation, and one area that the board discussed and had a very big debate on and a very tight vote on in terms of disaggregation, and this was the notion of quantitative thresholds. So one thing that we've heard repeatedly from users is that they find the level of disaggregation of information insufficient. So, for example, a lot of users will tell us that large other balances are very unhelpful. So you will see in a state, in a disaggregation of information, other creditors or other debtors, and this could be a very large number and no real explanation for what's actually included in that other balance. And they would like to see greater disaggregation of that. One way of encouraging or acquiring that additional disaggregation would be to have thresholds, to say that if your other creditors' balance was larger than 10% of the total for that line item, for example, you would be required to disaggregate that further. It doesn't necessarily have to be a requirement. It could perhaps just be an indicator that if it's greater than 10% of the total of the line item, that's an indicator that additional disaggregation would be useful. Now, that, as I said, that greater disaggregation has the potential to provide better information and indeed could be more enforceable than the more qualitative principles that we're talking about on disaggregation. But there are also some concerns that it could, in effect, be undermining the principle of materiality, and that by requiring disaggregation, you're taking away the judgment about what's material for entities. There are also some concerns about the difficulty involved in developing thresholds. Now, I know that there is some experience of thresholds being used in the US. I think the SEC has some requirements around thresholds. So I think we'd be particularly interested in any comments that you have about how useful those thresholds prove to be in a US context. As I said, we decided against that approach because of the concerns that we said around undermining materiality, but it was a very close vote in the board. What we will be doing in that area instead, though, is looking to explore some principles-based guidance to encourage greater disaggregation of these large other balances, and we're working on that at the moment. Slide 14 touches on the factors that we have developed to try and encourage, to try and give preparers guidance around when to use a by function or a by nature analysis of the information in the statement of financial performance. We've got four factors to consider there listed out, which is: what are the key components or drivers of profitability? Which method best matches internal reporting? What is peer industry practice for this particular entity? And then finally, can an allocation of expenses to functions faithfully represent those functions? If you're in a situation where a functional analysis would require a lot of arbitrary allocation of expenses, then that would be a strong indicator that you should be looking at providing the information on a by nature basis rather than a by function basis. Slide 15 we'd already touched on, and this is looking at disaggregating the functional line items by nature, so providing that additional information. We had three different approaches to doing that disaggregation that we discussed with the board. Approach A would require each functional line item to be disaggregated according to its nature, but we would leave it to entities to decide how to do that disaggregation, so they would have the judgment to say what would be made up in those lines and provide the disaggregation. Approach B would also require each functional line item to be disaggregated by nature, but the ISB would specify some components that they would expect to see within that disaggregation. Approach C would not require each functional line item to be disaggregated by nature. Instead, we would do an alternative analysis of expenses by nature. So you would have in total the expenses by nature analysis, and you would not be required to allocate it to the functions. The board's preferred approach was approach C, and the main reason I think we went for that approach was some concerns about how difficult it might be for a lot of entities to do either approach A or approach B. We heard from a lot of preparers that their systems would require significant changes in order to be able to do either approach A or approach B, and so that, I think, was what drove us largely to look at approach C. But again, I think that's an area that the FASB are doing some work on, and we'd be really interested in your experiences and what you have heard about those different types of approaches. Just quickly jumping forward to slide 18 and 19. Slide 18 describes the additional work that we have. I think I've touched on most of that already, but I'm willing to take any questions on that. And slide 19 talks about application to financial entities, which again, we've already touched on the fact that we're going to need to do some work, and we're starting discussing with the board how and to what extent the decisions we've made so far could apply to financial entities. So with that, I think I will hand over to Lauren, unless there are any. What we were hoping to do was to have a general sort of discussion about disaggregation together, having heard what the FASB's work on disaggregation have been. But if there are any immediate questions, I'm very happy to take them.
I have one quick question. The slide 14 and 15, did the board reject 14 and go to 15? Or is 14
separate?
So the reason I ask the question is 14 appears to be a company does an analysis and determines if it's
more appropriate to present by function or by nature? So if a company were to conclude by function, is 15 no longer relevant? Is 15 you required to require additional information by nature? So is 15 only a subset if you've chosen to do nature, or do you always do nature?
No, it's the other way around. If you do a by function analysis, then you're required to provide additional information by nature, and the three options on slide 15 apply.
Okay.
Yeah, if you've done a by nature analysis, we're not requiring additional information by function because users have told us they don't need that additional information. If by nature is the one that provides the most useful information, they don't want people to go away and make up functional analysis.
So the end result is it's either going to be by function and by nature, or it's going to be by nature.
Yes, that's right.
So back when 14, to me, the three of the boxes appeared to be in somewhat possible conflict with each other. The peer approach, the internal approach, and the key components approach. Couldn't those be in conflict with each other? And if so, which one takes primacy?
In theory, you would hope they were aligned, because you would hope that internal reporting was aligned with the way that the key drivers of profitability, and you would hope that within the same industry you would come to the same conclusion. But I do completely accept that there may be situations in which they're not aligned. And in those situations, we haven't prioritised those. There are a list of factors. You have to weigh them and come up with the one that you think carries the most weight.
I'm just thinking of those companies that aren't purely lined up on an industry basis. There's one that's weighted in one direction versus another, and then you throw in how management views and very different CEO takes very different approaches. So I could see these actually being in conflict more often than not. But
you want to get on that? Oh, go ahead, Christine.
So I'm not clear on what the mechanism is once the entity has decided, let's say they've decided that they should report by nature. What's the mechanism then to get more disaggregation? Not quantitative thresholds, is it tied to what they're looking at internally? Is it just
to be determined?
It's to be determined? Okay.
Did you want to?
Part of the guidance that we are still developing is at the conceptual level. It's similar to what FASB or what you discussed at some point about criteria for identifying what makes an item similar or dissimilar. So we have brought already some aspects for the board to consider about characteristics that could be considered for similarity or dissimilarity. So that would be the conceptual guidance that we would ask an entity to consider identifying different natural components.
Okay, so the idea would be then you have these principles that say here's the things you should consider in deciding whether something is similar or dissimilar. We're expecting you to break out stuff or put stuff together using these principles, and then the decision is on function or function and nature.
Yeah,
is that right? Yeah,
exactly. And by the way, when we also ask this question to our advisory bodies, and in general, both preparers and users supported this approach.
Right.
More than thresholds.
Yeah. That does make sense to me. So good job. Thanks,
Peter.
Rachel, you commented that when a company chooses to disaggregate by function, the users wanted additional information about nature, and I was thinking, well, wouldn't the opposite be true? Meaning, if I have a total labor number for the company, don't I want to know something about what that labor relates to, what functions it relates to? Is the reason that comment wasn't made because of a belief that it's unlikely that, for example, an industrial company will abandon disaggregating cost of sales and SG&A in preference for natural components?
I'm not sure whether we had that. We didn't hear anybody say that specifically, but I think it goes back to this idea you provide the approach that provides the most useful information to users. And I think if you had a wholesale switch of, sort of manufacturing companies going from functional to nature, then that may result in information being less useful. So I think that's what's underpinning this whole idea that we that you pick the one that's most useful, and if nature actually provides you most useful, you don't need that analysis to the particular functions, then forcing a functional analysis on top of it doesn't seem to make a lot of sense. Yeah.
Thank you.
Morning. Looks like it's your turn.
Sure. Good morning again. I wanted to present a little bit about the work we're doing in paper 21C, and I'll probably be going through most of my remarks will be made to the slide deck that's in 21D. I think just based on the remarks of what Rachel was saying, our projects differ quite significantly, first of all in terms of scope, but I think actually the decision about when you do a functional expense, I think you're saying that the board decided not to have the natural at a nested to the functional line. I think you're saying you're going for entity-wide disclosure.
Yes,
so I think it's a helpful lens because as I talk through this, we're looking to break down the functional line nested in the natural setting. That was that. I think that's a big difference, but we'll probably clarify that as we go through. So in terms of the project, I wanted to explain a little bit about how we got to this project scope and a little bit about some of our initial thinking as we go through it. In terms of slide two, I think I always kind of like the slide because it reminds me that we've had many performance reporting projects, some of these going back to 1979. So I always kind of find this helpful. Some of them we've done jointly. Some of them we've done with your predecessor body, the IASC. So we've been around the block on this one a few times. Most of these projects, in my experience, having gone through a lot of the memos and the consultation documents, most of these were fairly broad scope projects where they really looked at coming up with a structure for your performance statement, as in categories and subtotals, and they also sought to get some disaggregation. In some of these cases, most likely the previous financial statement presentation project, there was also a third objective, which was to have cohesiveness or connectivity or linkage across statements as well. Not all of those projects went for all three aspirations, but most of them certainly went for structure, and most of them sort of had ambition to get some more disaggregation. So in terms of what the board directed us to do, on slide three, we really kind of have broken this down into what we think are the two types of improvements, the disaggregation objective and then really the structure objective. There have been many different types of structures tried before in the past. We've tried for an operating measure, financing, investing. We've tried for other types of measures. I know the UK Accounting Standards Board back in 2000 came up with a different structure, a different type of set of subtotals would appear. So I think we can sufficiently say that we've tried many different types of subtotals. The most recent effort that the board has, I wouldn't say effort, that's probably the wrong word, I'm sorry. The most recent consultation the board has asked the FASB staff to do was to invite feedback in the 2016 agenda consultation about the performance reporting project and whether or not we should look to do a project that's holistic, whether it's more moderate or where it's actually more targeted. And so with the lens of having the two major themes of disaggregation and structure, we kind of had some feedback there from stakeholders. Definitely, I think we can echo the comment that you made earlier, Rachel, that we had a strong message that we want more disaggregation, that that is something that if you give us the information, we can do more with it, but please give us greater granularity. I think that was a genuine message that was very clear. I think the messages on structure were a little less, they're a bit hazy. I think we had some people who would like to have cohesiveness. They would like to have a structure. They want the structure to mimic and mirror in other statements. We certainly had people in that camp. We had other people saying, no, please don't give us a structure. We don't need this structure. We don't need to have subtotals. It's done voluntarily. It's not necessary that you come and define it. So because of that messages, I think the board had to take into account what part of this project, it wanted to move onto the active agenda. On slide five, we talk a little bit here about disaggregation. So if the board is going to disaggregate performance information, and again, I want to be clear, we're not looking at this strictly as a presentation outcome. When we looked to develop the research alternatives over the past couple years, we were fairly agnostic as to whether or not this would be presentation or disclosure. We very much viewed this as a decision for the active deliberations, and we didn't come up with it with a – we were not predicated on whether or not we were going to get all of this information presented. But there's really only a certain number of ways in which we could actually get information disaggregated. And we certainly, over the course of that project, the research aspect, we really tried to develop proposals, and we came back to the board with concepts and how we would look to put that in a standard-setting environment. Some of those we've included here. We're thinking about whether or not we could redefine infrequency of occurrence that currently has a concept in GAP today that we could redefine and give a more conventional meaning. We could look at breaking out some remeasurements. We could look at disaggregating functional lines into natural components. We could attempt some minimum lines, and we could develop some guidance on the aggregation process. So I think some of the you talked a little bit earlier about your scope. I think some of these things, we definitely had a look at some of these for our project as well. So on the next slide, on slide six, again, taking in the feedback that the board had from the agenda consultation, and then also having the different proposals that the staff had developed over the course of the research project in the past few years, I think the board reasoned that of all of the alternatives to provide greater disaggregation, it was more likely to be more successful if it focused on disaggregating lines such as cost of goods sold and SG&A. And so it decided that that part of the disaggregation would be prioritized. So it has effectively taken off the table the other approaches that I think you're still going to explore in your project. The board also decided that while structuring the performance statement is helpful, and they definitely see value in that, it recognized that all of the previous standard-setting attempts that I showed you the beginning slide were not necessarily successful. So it recognized the challenges in that, and it decided to keep that part of this project on the research agenda and thought that we will come back to that once we've achieved some greater disaggregation, and then we would see about whether or not the same need is there to define subtotals and categories for the income statement. I definitely think that we'll be able to learn from you guys, because if you're going ahead with that aspect of your project, there's certainly a learning for us in how you go forward. So that's largely where we are today. We certainly have, to kind of be a little bit more succinct, we have sort of two parts to the project. Disaggregation is now on our active agenda, and we're looking to proceed forward with that. The structure piece is actually still on the research agenda, and we're not really working on that at this time. So I might just pause there just in case anyone has any questions about the scope of this project.
Just a really quick question, so I understand this. So you started off thinking about disaggregating the functional line items into nature. And then there's this other issue on page 13 of the other document where you got a lot of feedback saying people wanted to see selling split out of SG&A. Could you just maybe elaborate, because you've got sort of nature disaggregation of functional items and finer functional disaggregation of functional items.
So I guess the way I probably catch this is, I think we recognize that lines such as SG&A comprise a lot of disparate things. And we recognize that some of those disparate things that are put together in that line are sub-functions or lower-level functions than just at the SG&A line. So we are yet to work out exactly how we would go about splitting apart what has already been put together. One suggestion was that, at the very least, please try to break apart selling from the rest of general and administrative. That is just one way in which we could break apart what is already put together.
Gary?
On disaggregation of cost of goods sold and SG&A, you're looking to do these by individual line item or in the aggregate?
Right. So that was the main difference. I think we're trying to get the disaggregation of the contents of the line. So the disaggregation would be nested to the line, whereas I think what Rachel has just explained, you're looking to disaggregate, you're going into a functional setting of cost of goods sold, but you're not looking to disaggregate cost of goods sold in that nested structure. Yeah. You're looking to do entity-wide, I think.
Right. And the reason why that discussion was, because alternative A or something was similar to what this is the total natural expenses can, you know, relatively easily be reconciled to total functional expenses. But the bigger the companies you go, you're just loaded with all sorts of allocations of internal costs. And then there's allocations of allocations, really following budgetary accounting internally. And the other issue you've got is what's in one line versus the other varies from year to year. And there's always stuff in the, I'll call it the fuzzy wide line between G&A and cost of sales separates. And it does change from year to year, sometimes driven because you think it's the right thing to do. Other times, just how you chose the budget for the next year and so on. But big companies, you got all sorts of shared and common costs and outsourced costs, and you're just tons of allocations and then allocations beyond allocations in there. How are you going to deal with that?
Can I come back to you when we get to the later part of this? It might be helpful.
Go ahead, Jim.
Gary, couple of us had that concern in adding the project is that we need to, if we're going to do anything, we need to focus first on whether we can actually even achieve that given inventory systems, departments, other allocations. And if we can't, have a lot of skepticism about the ability to move forward with that aspect of the project. I actually like seeing where you're headed because I think, or at least as a potential solution, I'm not abandoning that we might be able to get there, but I think learning from you about those efforts, and maybe if we can't achieve what we've tried for decades to achieve, you know, a different angle is saying maybe we don't quite go that far. We just get total natural as opposed to the piercing allocations.
Sometimes you got to walk before you can run because the general ledgers at the lowest level will always be natural.
Yeah.
And it's when they roll up and through budget centers and organization
inventory costing,
they pivot. But even inventory cost, the lowest level, you know the materials you
at the lowest level, you just don't know.
You know the occupancy costs. Yeah. And that's why I wouldn't say it's easier, inexpensive to do in the total, but it's a lot easier and a lot less costly to do the total than it is to try to push down because there's no way you're going to come up with a comparable, consistent, relatively easy way to disaggregate allocations.
Unlike
budgetary accounting and
unlike IFRS, we allow LIFO. I mean, go try and figure out how to naturalize LIFO allocations.
Well, I suspect you'll hear what I just said from other preparers along the way.
Hans,
I understand your prioritization of disaggregation. Personally, I think the biggest added value of our project is the structure and the creation of subtotals with all the algorithmic trading going on. And I'm sure a lot of those algorithms pick EBIT, and they just pick EBIT as defined by a company, totally incomparable. So I think the more automated consumption and production of financial information, the more important structuring becomes by us. Otherwise, others are doing it for us and with totally incomparable.
John Wu?
Thank you. On the scope of your project, may I ask on the issue we dealt with on slide 14 on our paper, determine whether by function or by nature method provides the most useful information. That part is not in your research project. So I'm very interested why you are not going to explore this part.
I think part of the reason why we have not developed criteria is because our starting points are quite different. We don't have this existing literature that allows for the optionality in U.S. GAAP. A large part of the literature on presentation is from the SEC. So in that case, we don't really even have a concept of functional or natural in the same sense that already exists in IS-1. So our starting point is to take what we see as common practice from SEC literature, which are lines such as cost of goods sold and SG&A, and we are calling those functional lines. But we don't come from the same start, so we don't need to build this in our literature.
All right. That's very interesting, because the next one on your project is disaggregation of cost of sales and SG&A. So that's a kind of quite similar to our by function, disaggregated by function element into some natural components.
Right.
So, Rachel presented, you asked the opposite case of disaggregation, but in your case, that's not the issue.
Right.
All right, thank you.
That's actually a nice segue, because we don't have the same starting point of what's a functional line. So if we're going to disaggregate something, we actually need to tell people, what are you going to disaggregate? What's the thing you now need to break apart? So we're at the different point where we actually have to now describe the line that we want to get disaggregated. That's probably more our gating question. You already had your functional natural pivot point. Our pivot point's different. We're now saying, tell us the thing you're going to break apart. So largely, what slide 8 really is trying to say is that when the board decided to disaggregate functional lines of the natural components, at that point, they said, we would like the staff to focus on the SEC literature, because, again, that's where our majority of our presentation literature comes from. So that was kind of where we originated our working descriptions of cost of goods sold and SG&A. When I say cost of goods sold, I actually mean a cost of revenue line. I don't mean that strictly in the sense of just the cost of relieving inventory. But that's largely what we're trying to say is, what lines do you now need to disaggregate in the nested way to the line? So when we came up with our working descriptions, in the memo we talk a little bit about how we had a few iterations or stutter steps to get to the final working descriptions, and they're on slide 9. But largely, we set up a project resource group. We came up with what we thought would be a reasonable starting point. We shared that with our project resource group. They gave us some feedback. And what you see in slide 9 is effectively what we concluded with, or what we took to the board. So that's largely the same. We tried to leverage the existing literature, because most companies already comply with that in SEC presentations, so we thought that was a natural starting point. So on slide 10, I guess it's probably fair to say that the board will not always agree with the staff. So they provided us with some helpful feedback on slide 10. And they were less excited about us linking it directly to the SEC's specific literature. And reasonably enough, we did hear a lot of concerns from our project resource group that maybe the SEC literature is a little dated and it's a little stale. So actually tying it so tightly to the SEC literature doesn't necessarily reflect new types of businesses and where we may be heading in the future. So the board actually directed the staff to kind of come up with a more principles-based approach, and they gave us a bit of a segue into how they would like us to move this forward in terms of describing the line that we want to disaggregate. And so you can kind of see their feedback there in the box on slide 10. So that's kind of the first element there about the line that we want to break apart. So that's the first aspect. The next aspect, when we go to slide 12, is really about once you've worked out the thing that you want to break apart or the line that you want to disaggregate, you now need to describe the basis with which you're going to disaggregate it. And so the board, at the time when it set this onto the active agenda, it directed the staff to focus on the description that we already have in US GAAP of natural expense classification. That definition really only applies to the not-for-profits that are that are in the U.S. GAAP. So this definition doesn't really hold together in terms of for-profits. So if we're going to do for-profit setting, we need to think about whether or not this existing definition can be transposed directly. So the board said, start with that stuff and come up with what you think would be a way in which we can use that the natural definition. So a simile, we came up with our initial working description. We refined a little bit when we put it to the project resource group. We had some concerns ourselves about using that, transposing that definition directly. So on slide 13, you can see our final working description that we gave to the board. Some of the things that you raised earlier, Gary, a bit about the problems with going for a pure disaggregation of natural components is you run into things like allocations. And we recognize certainly that that is a huge impediment. We've learned from similar projects in the past that this is a huge concern when you have inventory costing and when components get capitalized or hung up on the balance sheet and they eventually do flow back into the income statement many years later. When you go for a pure disaggregation of natural, do you have to retain the identity the whole way through the hang-up process? We know that's a problem for capitalized costs. We know departmental allocations are a huge issue, that when things get allocated to a department and then reallocated, they lose their natural identity within the system. And then there's other things that we know get created and eliminated. So legal subsidiary allocations may get created, and then they're eliminated on consolidation. So we learned a few things along the way. I think in terms of where we got to with the board, we didn't have the sense of whether or not the board should or should not pierce the allocation. If you're going for a pure form of natural disaggregation, the board would have to answer that question. So what we tried to do in the paper for the board was to present them with the issue of, do you or don't you want to pierce this? They didn't make a decision. We weren't asking them for the decision. We're more or less presenting them with the issue at hand. And so with that, I think in terms of slide 15, I think the board recognized the challenges of piercing that allocation methodology. And they really questioned whether or not we needed to go with a natural disaggregation, if at all. And so we potentially may be rowing back on this project, and the board asked the staff to consider whether or not we could base the disaggregation on how the entity internally reviews the components of that line. So if the entity internally reviews it based on a departmental structure, or if they internally review the components naturally or a hybrid of natural departments or allocations, then that would be more disaggregation for users in a nested structure. And so what we're going to do next is see how companies internally review their components of cost of goods sold and SG&A internally. The other mechanism that the board said is, well, rather than going for a pure form of natural disaggregation, we already know that entities have to make decisions about how they roll up information into those lines. So that already exists today. There has to be some mechanism for putting things together. So if an entity doesn't look at it internally, maybe a backstop position would be to rely on the existing systems and processes an entity has and disaggregate using the current mechanism with which they used to aggregate in the first place. So I think where the staff is at this point is we may row back from a pure form of natural. We may rely on either the existing systems or a management view. And in terms of the next slide, in slide 16, the direction we received from the board at the last meeting is we're going to meet with some of the larger preparers in a diverse mix to ask how they look at this internally. How do they look at the components? How do they do mapping and tracking into the consolidation process? And what type of information we could get from the consolidated roll-up information. So that's kind of where we're at in terms of the project. I might just open it up there if you have any discussions or comments.
That help your question, Gary?
It helps answer the question. I'm not sure your answer helps move your project forward, though. Just a few reactions. Even the working definition on slide 13 is probably close to or reasonably as good as you probably can do. I think with respect to inventory, I mean, and actually did this drill a long time ago, and the way we started looking at basically the cash spendings, you know, you can go through the cost of production, you know, the payroll, the facilities costs, and so on, and you add them up. Then what you do is the adjustments is change in opening and ending inventory balances. I mean, just don't worry about what's got capitalized versus expended. Just assume, say, all the labor is expended and consumed, and then just the last item is changing between beginning and ending inventories, recognizing with the minute you have a standard cost system, you've got limits in terms of how it does it. I think in terms of how companies do it, I think when you do your outreach, you're going to find every possible way you can imagine is probably very commonly done by a decent subset. So and when you ask, well, how does management look at it? It depends on what level of management. In my former life, it was largely headcount, you know, and payroll spending and some travel, nothing else. So some years you'd get a, depending on the budgeting philosophy of the current CFO, you might get a fully burdened budget center where I'm allocating all these common costs to you to let you know that these costs exist. It's much bigger than what you directly control. But if I couldn't control it one bit, just a number given to me, and just kind of look the other way. Other times, you know, we're only going to give you the costs you can actually control, which is probably more variable costs, and the central costs are kept someplace else. I mean, these things change from time to time. And so I think one of the, and I'm not saying one's better than the other, but they do change. And I think as you do your outreach, you're going to find is that internal restatements is going to be a huge issue inside of the stuff to deal with. So, I mean, you'll get all this feedback from current preparers as opposed to a former preparer, but I suspect nothing has changed.
So you're suggesting that and the question, how often do you change the basis your outreach?
Well, I mean, the problem is the bases, there's logic to the bases, but, you know, you might allocate, you know, benefits costs is just a percent of labor costs. Doesn't necessarily mean everybody gets the same pension benefit in it, but that's what you do on a pool basis and allocate it out, for example. But I think more funnily, budget, this heavily tied internal budgeting and management performance measure, and it changes all the time. Sometimes just the personalities that are running the company and who their backgrounds are.
Are you, sorry, can I clarify what you're saying? So are you, if we were to go with a structure of using an internal view, are you saying that in this environment you would still want to have consistency over time and an accounting policy allocation?
Well, I think, you mean, I'm not saying I want it, but I think typically financial things, you have 3 years of P&L and 3 years of cash flow. Typically, line items are viewed on a consistent, supposed to be on a comparable or, I guess, consistent basis in this context. But things change internally. If you think segments change, this stuff changes quite regularly as well.
Tom?
And I'm not saying you can't get by it, but it. I think you've got to deal with the cost benefits.
We're already late, so Christine wants to get in, and we'll go Tom and talk and go
just
to lunch.
Quick question, Gary. So the question I have is, are you supportive then of just the straight company-wide natural disaggregation as a way of getting around this problem?
Yes, that's what I argued for, and ultimately is where we stand today. Because I think, I won't say it'll be easy and quick to do, but it's doable.
It's doable. Okay, thank you.
Tom?
Just kind of along what Gary said at the end is, a lot of these things are not mutually exclusive. So in our discussion, we understood that users were really interested in natural. I think given your starting point, it sounds like users are really interested in disaggregation of line items as they appear on the income statement. And so we ended up, to get the natural, went with the entity. But that does not say that one shouldn't look at the line items and do some kind of a finer distinction. And I guess just as you've gone through it, you run into the same problems we did. If you try and do a set of natural, you run into the allocation problem. You are looking at a finer set of functional, apparently. And then to try and get around all these problems, you're sort of allowing that the user might, or the preparer would define what this disaggregation would look like. Is that correct?
Yeah.
So just kind of following on, do you see, like, if I come back to the two big issues, do you see providing some information on natural, which could be done in parallel, as an important thing?
I definitely think that's certainly an option the project will consider, as in another way of saying that is maybe providing some top-up natural information on an entity-wide basis rather than nested to the line. That's certainly an option that the project would likely consider.
Tom?
Yes, just a quick comment about the allocations. I think we have to segregate two types of issues. The one is capitalized one, and the other three are different.
Yes.
So capitalized one is quite difficult because it's capitalized. But the other threes are difficult, but it's not really possible because it's all internal, transaction. So basically, in the proper accounting procedure, all these internal allocation are account payable and receivable within the department, and it should be eliminated. And then automatically you can get PS, natural component. So we have to distinguish the issue of the capitalized cost and the other threes.